It gives me a great pleasure to introduce to you our Queen Regent for 1974-1975, Ina Utila. Ina is 91 years old, and she's the youngest one you can imagine. She's always going around seeing what she can do for someone else at the Pioneer's home. You can always find her at the coffee stand in the rec room. And at night, she's always in there cleaning up, so everything will be in shape for the next day. And Ina, I think she's going to have some interesting information to give you about the early days in Fairbanks and when she first came to the country. I think she's also going to tell you of an experience that her husband and several others had in going from Seward over to the country, wasn't that, Ina?
Iditarod.
And Mike is going to record this.
From Seward to Iditarod.
Yes. Thank you, Ina. And Mike is going to record this. And if any of you have any questions, please address Ina, and she'll be glad to answer. And be sure and speak so that she can hear. She has a little problem. Would you like to tell us how you have to come to the country in the first place?
I think they would like to know how you came to Alaska, Ina. Why did you come?
And why didn't I come? Well, my brothers wanted to come here, you know, when so many started to come here in the first of the century. I came 1901 to the States, and my brothers wanted to go first, and seemed like they all wanted to go, you know, so many. And so so they went, and then we had a farm, and
When did you first come to Alaska?
Huh?
When did you you came to the United States in 1901?
1901.
And you came to Alaska when?
Oh, came to Alaska 1913. We went to Cape. I went to Cape Cod first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and my sister was there, and then my family came. My mother and father and all, they come, you know, within a year and a half, whole family was here. Because my father said they wouldn't stay, you know, away from their children. They, if they go to America, they wouldn't come back soon.
So your entire family came? I know all of you came?
Yeah, all of us. Well, here, you know, inside of a year and a half. And so
but your brothers wanted gold. You came to Alaska for gold, was that right?
Well, not exactly gold, yeah. No, we didn't. The way we come to Alaska, my husband's brother was here, Charlie Utila. He come here first. And then his younger brother came here and stayed one summer. And he come back and he said he's going to go back over that. So they come, you know, with this, you know, the skis. Yeah.
They didn't ski all the way to Alaska. They must have come by ship.
They came from Seattle. They started from Seattle boat, an ocean boat, and then they come. Then they came from. Then they started on the skis from Seward to Iditarod. Yeah, and six of those Finnish boys.
Were they all Finnish boys?
Huh?
All Finnish boys? Finns?
All Finns, yeah. They were all Finns, yeah. They were all Finns, and they came, yeah. Yeah, all Finns, and they came, skied. And that wasn't very much of Seward, and that wasn't very much of Anchorage at that time. very few places, houses there. And they went then. They went all those, you know, Skwetna and all those places, you know. I know.
How long did it take them to ski from Seward to Iditarod?
I forgot how long it was, you know. Was it? I'm not sure, but maybe it was something like 14 days or so. I don't know. I'm not sure for that. Yeah.
That's a long way.
But then they came. Went to and this Charlie Utila, he always wanted to go, you know. He was in Arizona first, and then he come to Vaduz, and little by little he came, and then when he come here, and then the others, and then he went to Susanna Stampede, and Charlie.
Where? Shoshana.
Shoshana.
Yeah, Susanna Stampede.
That's out of Northway. Shoshana is a mining district southwest of Northway.
Did Charlie Uatilla strike gold?
Huh?
Did Charlie Uatilla strike gold? Did he get a good strike of gold?
Uatilla, did he hit gold?
Did he hit the gold?
Yeah.
No, he didn't.
I didn't.
No, he didn't. He didn't. He was. He didn't look for gold first. You know, Tom. You know, he did work. You know, and he went to work for coal miners. He didn't looking. He wasn't looking. He went to Susanna Stampede, but when he didn't get there, you know, he quit. He went back to Juneau. And he got married. Yeah, and then he was working in. Then he come back to Iditarod and work. Worked there, you know. They were putting a wood contracts. They had wood contracts and they were plating. You know, they were thawing ground with the steam first. Put the points down. You know that. You don't remember that.
What brought you to the interior first, Ina?
Yeah.
What brought you here? Were you married then when you came
to the interior? Charlie?
No, you.
Me?
You.
Oh, I came, you know, because those brother-in-laws, they come. They come, they want to come back. And this Toivon, the youngest of those boys, or Utila boys, he was here one summer in Iditarod. He came here. And because Charlie was here, so he came and he liked it here. He come back to Montana, and that's why we were in Montana, built Montana. And he said he's going back. I said, what makes you go back over there? He said, there's sourdough hot cakes. So good. They were so good, those sourdough hot cakes. I'm going back and eat them. I said, we got very good buttermilk hot cakes here, you know, they eat some too.
I didn't want that.
Yeah. So he wanted to come back here. Yeah, he liked it here. And he was working for miners, but I'm trying to find himself. Yeah.
Well, when Gus and Charlie and the others skied to Iditarod, did they have to carry all of their food and?
No.
No.
Oh no, that was roadhouses. That was roadhouses. Yeah, that's a roadhouse. And you can eat lunch and everything in the roadhouse and all the meals. Yeah. Oh no, they couldn't carry wood, carry food. It would too much. It would have been too much.
I see.
Yeah.
Then when you came to Iditarod, did you ski?
Huh?
Did you ski to Iditarod?
Did I?
When you went to Iditarod.
Yeah.
How did you get there?
Well, then we came. Those boys came March. In March, they came in March and. They take the boat, came in March, so started from Seattle, and then we come in June. We came first of June. We came first of June, on a, what they call outside passage, you know, to Nome, went to Nome. And we had pretty stormy weather there in Bering Sea. before we got to Nome. We went by the way of Nome and St. Michael and all those. Yeah. Come.
We
started first, huh?
Go ahead, finish your trip.
We started first of June, you know, from Seattle, and we got to Nome all around 9th, I guess, or something. And we had those icebergs on the Bering Sea, icebergs. They were tooting at horn all the time, you know. And it was really dark, awfully dark. But when we got to Nome, it was about midnight, 2 o'clock, and sun was shining, and it was just beautiful. I said, "Why, this is just like in old country Finland, like nights, all daylight." And I started to write the cards back fast, you know. Yeah, it's so pretty here. And then we were in, we stopped in Nome just a little while. We went to shore, took a boat and went to shore and having breakfast in that. Those big boats can land. I guess you know that they can land in the.
Yeah, they have to anchor offshore.
We went on a small boat, you know. Just they came and get us, you know. A small boat. We went that night, you know. But they got then in the morning they took us over, and they had a big barge, just a open barge, no. And everybody went there, and we were hoisting it, you know, with the cables. They pull us over there, you know, and the boat, you know, they couldn't get right close, and that boat went right back. And another boat came. When we were ready to go next day, we went to St. Michael, and Jumatila came from San Francisco and took us over. Big boat too, came from San Francisco, and we went to St. Michael's, and they did the same thing there. and then we, smaller boat, come and get us. Louise, it was named.
Oh, Louise?
Louise, yeah. Louise, yeah, that was pretty big boat, but that was a Yukon boat.
Yeah,
that was a Yukon boat. And they work on that boat because a while, you know, they have to make it tighter. And that was pretty big, had to be pretty big boat, you know, and a mouth of the Yukon, because it's wide. Yeah, so that was big one. And then we went on that, you know, so we got through that Yukon, the mouth of the Yukon. Then we had a smaller boat again. That was, I don't know, third or fourth. And that was Klondike.
The whole Klondike?
Yeah. I went on a Klondike.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Klondike, and that's a smaller boat.
Yeah.
And then we got to, Grumelg on the way, and it was really nice on the Yukon there. And it was beautiful. And then we got to Holy Cross finally. And then we got the Nancy Bell, and it was so dry, it was so terrible dry that we couldn't get only little vision. And we had a horse and they had a barge on, and we had a boat, we had a horse, and a man was driving the horse, and we have that picture. I'm sorry we don't have that picture, then we would be really, would be pretty nice to see. And they got stuck on a bar all the time, that little boat. And so the fellas take the shoes off, and they went, and they had a long poles for that reason. You know, sent went and check the boat out from the bar, and then gravel bar, and we went a little ways again, and we finally got to Iditarod.
Well, tell us about your first home in Iditarod.
Yeah, first home in Iditarod. The It was awful hard to get any place, and that was in very many women told yet then. And place, every place was just taken, you know, just couldn't get in any place hardly. But we had a place, when I get there, we walk over the hills, 7 miles to Iditarod from a landing place. Iditarod, you know where we got with the boat, that was the landing place. They didn't mind that, it's a landing place and where the business houses were on boat. And then we went to Flat, they call it the Flat. No, they call it Discovery where we went. Flat is the other place again. And we went to walk over the hills, you know, and here they come, you know. Our husbands came and meet, when they heard we were coming, they had telephones, so they called it, that we were coming over the hills walking to Discovery. And so they come and meet us. All three of them. And then I went to work asked me to come and work, so I stayed one day, and I went to work, and boarding in this mess house, they call them mess houses, and so we had a place to stay all with somebody, you know, a couple of nights, and but we had to get a place, and so we just couldn't get anything at all, and we found an old blacksmith shop. It was deserted already, and there was no floor or anything. So we had to take that. That was the only place we could get. Every place was taken, and so my husband went. Cuts went and get the planks, rough planks. They had sawmill. Get the rough planks and lay them on that floor. Frozen floor, and well, it was in frozen then, you know. And so they were all right, and then we got a bed, you know, and one of those couches or those that you can make up, you know, for day, and then we went and get a Yukon stove, and that was a place, but it was just so, moss was dripping down. It was awful bad. Then we went and get there. Then we went and get egg boxes and made a dresser. Made a dresser, put a curtain in it, got about 3 boxes on top of the other and made a dresser and put a curtain in front of it.
Big egg boxes?
Yeah, those wooden boxes. Wooden boxes. It was, you know, those that 30 dozen every cage, you know, the wooden boxes, and 30 dozen, 15 dozen in each end. And they were very big, you know, made nice.
You just stacked them up?
Yeah, stack them up, yeah. Sure. I had about 3 or 4 on top of the other, and put a curtain in front of me, then we could even keep a food in there. But we didn't have to cook because I went to work right away, this mess house, and that was pretty close. And it was a Finnish lady and a Swedish lady running it. And they cook themselves, and then I was doing the other work, or washing dishes. And they had 40 men. Yeah, 40 men and 3 help. You have to work. Yeah. And he was a Finn fella, and he was Finn fella, and he who was mining, and he went broke on that. Yeah, and they had a hard time to get their money, these 2 ladies. And
well, how long did you live in the blacksmith shop?
Oh,
how long?
Well, these boys. That they own a cabin and right in town, and they promised that cabin for us, you know. They were going to leave, you know. They were going to leave to Swedish boys, and they promised us a cabin, and that looked like a palace compared to this. compared to that old blacksmith shop. Yeah. But we got along good in that, you know, because we didn't have to work. Didn't have to cook. And
so you went to Iditarod in June of 1913?
Huh?
Was it June of 1913 that you went to Iditarod?
Yeah, that was June 25th that we got in there, Iditarod.
1913, so that's 61 years ago.
Yeah, June 25th, 25, we got there, yeah. We started from Seattle first, and we took us that long to from Seattle to Iditarod.
What boat did you come up on from Seattle?
Huh?
What boat did you come up on from Seattle?
Senator.
What?
Senator.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Senator, and then Umatilla to take from there, you know, and then whatchamacallit, Klondike, and all those other boats.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we saw they were trying fish, you know, all over. We went to just as soon they put a blanket on, we went to the shore to see those native faces then, yeah.
When did you come to Fairbanks, Ina?
Oh.
When did you come down to Fairbanks then?
When we came to, we came to Fairbanks. Well, then Charlie came over to, Charlie was winching here, then he went to work to this Charlie that was here first, the brother, you know, Charlie. He came to Fairbanks and then he went to work. He was winching in for FE. He was winching for FE company. And they were here living then too. Yeah. We come to Fairbanks. We came to Fairbanks Second World War. When the Second World War started, you know, we had to come here.
And then you lived in Iditarod all the time before that?
Yeah, we lived in Iditarod. No, we didn't live in Iditarod all the time. First I went to this here Cape Cod and was working in a family house, you know, three years and 4 months. Then my mother was in Michigan, and my brothers, and they went. She was keeping house for all them, you know, all my brothers. You know, they weren't married yet, and they were mining there. They went to mine. That was first when we came here, and then we went. Then from there, you know, we went to Butte, Montana. But yeah, and then that's why we come from here.
It was 1917 when you came here then?
Huh?
1917?
No,
when you
came
to Fairbanks?
Second World War.
Oh, Second World War.
No, we came to Fairbanks from Iditarod, Second World War. Yeah, we've been in Iditarod all the time. Oh. Cousin and I, we've been there, you know. We come from Butte, you know, we come from 1913 it was when we come to Iditarod, and then we come from Iditarod when the Second World started, 41.
And then after the war, though, you and Gus went back to mining.
Huh?
After World War II, you went back
to mining. Yeah, after World War II. After World War II, we went. We were mining then already. We were mining, World War II started 41, and we started to mine 32. We were mining then already, yeah. I don't know, I got to mix this here a little bit. But we were mining, we started to mine 1932, and in Iditarod. And then we had to come here, you know. We couldn't mine, have to move everything here, all the machinery. They went and get all of our machinery. The army went and got all of our machinery and come here and go to defense work. So they they bring all everything, you know, across the country.
How did they bring the machinery? Just
run it.
The tractors run it.
Yeah, they were working. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they come, bring. Yeah, they come with the cats and all, you know, come across the country. It didn't take so long. Yeah, they bring them. Cats and yeah.
Did you ever travel from Seward up to Iditarod?
Huh?
Did you ever travel from Seward to Iditarod?
From Seward?
Mm-hmm.
No, but I traveled from. then we went out.
St. Michael's?
Yeah. Well, we went out 1919. We went out 1990. We were here 6 years in Iditarod. We wasn't going to stay in Iditarod just so we get money, you know. We would have gone out, you know. Dogs were howling and mud all over and cables and everything. And my gosh, you know. Yeah. We just didn't like it at all. We thought we'd go out right away when we get a ticket to get out. But we stayed and stayed a little by little and stayed. So I guess we can get used to the dog howling and everything. In 1919, we went out. We've been here 6 years. 1919, we went out Then we got stuck on a Yukon there. We got stuck there, you know, 20 miles below Circle. Two boats. And there was those fellas that's been in Tanana. They had one boat there in Tanana. They called that Fort Gibbon, Tanana, Fort Gibbon that time when the soldiers were there, the First World War soldiers.
That's where I was.
Yeah, that's where you was.
Yeah.
The First World War soldiers were there, and they were that Holy Head then. They called that Fort Gibbon at Tanana, and then we went out together, this other boat then. And we got stuck in the ice. They had a 40-mile ice already. We were late. We were late because this here, Anderson, everybody know that Anderson, he was in Fairbanks here later, you know. Oh, what was his other name? He had that store. He had a store on there. He was I forgot his name now.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, he had that store and Anderson, he was working for NC.
NC, yeah.
Mm-hmm. NC and he was in the Yukon and then, you know, he was in Dykeman and he was working for that too.
We're stuck in the ice on the river.
Huh?
You say you were stuck in the ice?
Yeah, we got stuck in the ice at 40 mile.
He didn't have
his work finished, you know, at Dykeman. They had Dykeman over there, you know, on the way between Flat and Holy Cross. Mm-hmm. Anvik. Anvik, and you go on between that, and they had Dykeman and he did a White Horse. That was all White Horse stuff, and he was in. So we were late, you know, and they at 40 mile they had ice formed, you know, and it was so cold, it was ice there, and it formed a big jam, 20 miles from Circle, and. So they started the hall, the company started the hall, the assistant president was in that boat, you know, where the soldiers went, you know, vibing. And they called the women, all the wives and children, natives, hauled them to Circle, $20, you know, right across the, to Sokol, you know, they went right across on the grass with the dogs. And they were taken all, and the fellas have to walk from that boat to something, we're going to put the winter quarters over there. Going to put winter quarters, but then they didn't do it. That jam broke down. We were taken, they were sawing a slough over there with the saws, you know, and going to put all those boats for winter quarters there. We didn't think we'd never get through. So they went and the ice broke and the jam came down and we were right there. And we punch a hole, you know, that punch a hole in the boat, but we got all right to the place. And that night we went and we got to circle. We got through then that night, but then bigger boat has to come down, but we had was burned from I did a lot where we started from where we had, you know, and had was burned, and that was white boat, and we went, you know, and they were taken up there.
Or did you get outside? Did you manage to go clear up the river to White Horse?
Yeah.
And then you took the train at White Horse?
Yeah.
And then visited outside?
We went right through to Seattle. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we went right through to Seattle, and that boat we got all through. We got through fine, you know, and that, you know, those boats, mm-hmm. We got through. We had no trouble at all then after the chain broke, yeah. Well, anyway, we got to Seattle, all right, yeah.
And then you came back the next spring?
Yeah, we came back in the spring then, 1920, we come back and we went this Iditarod Trail.
You went on the Iditarod Trail?
Yeah, we went to Iditarod then, we went back to Iditarod.
How did you go? Where was the trail from Anchorage?
Well, we went to you say.
No, you knew what the trail was, so.
Yeah, I know what the trail was. Yeah, we started, the railroad had been made only to as far as Wasilla. Yeah, so we started from Wasilla. Yeah. We started from Wasilla to, on a trail, and we had dogs. We were lucky, you know, the dog team came from Kaskokwim, from Bethel. The dog team, we knew the men, you know, who had this dog team, you know, Bobby Gurgi and Felda, their name was. And we knew them fellas, and they got the dogs, 17, seven of the dog teams. And they were real good and tough, you know, those dogs, because they had just come in. And so we got those dogs, and they told us to give tallow to those dogs, because they gave a little bit of tallow. They didn't feed the dogs at all, you know, only in the evening. And they said they sure like, you know, have a little bit, you know, every noon they gave a piece of tallow. And so we did the same thing. And we started, we went on a train to Wasilla, and then we started from Wasilla, and we went, you know, all those places, you know, we went to Kilik and all those places, so they told us, you know, that, and Susitna, don't go, the Susitna River is breaking, you know, say be careful over the crossing Susitna River, because it was, you know, pretty late in the spring. It was April when we started. And so we went and we got to Skvetna, and we got the, all those places, Skvetna and all those roadhouses.
There were roadhouses.
Yeah, it was roadhouses, and we got from roadhouse to roadhouse, and we eat lunch, you know, every noon, and we eat, stayed overnight, you know, in roadhouses. It was good. I was in roadhouses all over. All over the trail. And we had lunch and stayed overnight. And we had our own blankets. Somebody told us, you know, better get your own blanket, you know. I got a blanket, you know, double blanket. white, and I put that and we went between because those bears weren't very good. They had those bear skins on. We didn't like the bear skin sleeping, you know. So we had that blanket and we had nice, and they got good houses on.
How long did it take you to go from Wasilla to Iditarod?
Huh?
How long did it take you to go from Wasilla to Iditarod?
Oh, I forgot now just how it was, you know. I forgot how long it was, you know. It was quite a long time.
It was a long ways.
Yeah. When did you first meet Mr. Creamer?
I really meet you in a pioneer home. But I know you were Charlie Clayman. But I knew your relatives.
Yeah.
Oh, we know all them.
Yeah,
we know Bill and all of them, your brothers.
My brother-in-law and them were head of the First National Bank here. And Bill is still with them.
Bill is your nephew.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we know Bill. We have an ice over there, you know, in Fairbanks. And an ice on another one. They had those queens, you know, and all of them. Bill was there too and all of them.
Yeah.
Well, anyway. Anyway, we when we got to we got all right, you know, across the Susitna River. It was I was really scared. You could just see almost open places. It was wide too. Mm-hmm. And then we went to we got to Squetna Roadhouse, and we saw a couple of. It's been so warm that winter that the bears come up, and Squetna Roadhouse, you know, they had a. Had two bear skins that they had soaked, you know, come out of were thin, yeah. And then we went down and summit. We went summit and we had such a bad trail that was in the birds track even. I have to ask the dogs, but 200 miles, Gus thought it was that much. He had to break the trail. He had a break the trail, you know, and I don't know, we didn't know where the mailman was. Mailman couldn't even come. They had a mailman then, you know, from Iditarod to Anchorage, you know, on. But then we didn't see mailman or birds or nothing. I mean, bird tracks.
Ina, did you know Judge Moody?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He was a relative of mine.
Yeah. And then then we got to, Gus has to find out, you know, there's a at the summit, you know, there's open place, really narrow at the summit there, you know. If you go in there, you know, you'll be wet, you know, you'll get wet. I don't know if you drown, but they had, you know, places where, you know, like little couple of tree planks, you know, that you go over. I don't know, but we had a tough, real tough, and but we made it all the time, you know, from Roadhouse to Roadhouse, to Roadhouses, and summit, you know. Then we got when we were at summit, we had to make those moccasins every morning. Put the moccasins on dogs' feet, and take them off, you know, in the evening. And then we got to, I remember that Rhone River. We got over the summit and finally, and I must the dogs all the time. And we had, I forgot his name, he was from Flat too. I can't remember his name now. He had five dogs, and his dogs was so lazy, you know, I have to break a trail for him too. he was old fella, and he can make his, he just couldn't make his dogs go. Forgot his name now. And so he went after me, and I was cold. It was 35 below. Yeah, it was pretty nippy. I was cold, but they ask, you know, guests ask all the time, are you cold? I say, no, I'm not cold, but I was. And then we got to Rhone River. And then this Rhone River was all clear from the snow and everything. And it was nice. And I went in, then I went to sleigh, you know, and Gus went to handlebar. We went down and slick to the roadhouse. And well, did that ever look good? It was nice roadhouse. And she said, you want tea? I said, no, but I like about 5 cups of coffee. And I had coffee, and it was really nice. And then we didn't have too bad from that. And we got to Pilac. They call it Pilac Roadhouse, because then it was nice, you know, closer to McGrath and all those places.
When you lived in Iditarod, did you order your food from...
Huh?
How did you get your food to Iditarod? Or did you grow vegetables in the garden?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, but see, that's Tukatna. 22 miles to Tukatna from flat. Mm-hmm. 22 miles. And they had Tukatna, and they had, you know, you all know Twitzel. Twitzel, yeah, Twitzel boys, yeah, and they had a big garden, and they bring all the time there was vegetables, but I had a garden, and I had so many carrots, you know. I even furnished the carrots for, you know, that was in Orford then, though. That was in Orford. They weren't in Iditarod, but they were in Orford. They were in Iditarod too, but then they moved to Orford. 22 miles to Tukatna, and they bring...
For meat, did you have moose and caribou, or for meat?
Yeah, we had Twitzel had, in Iditarod, had reindeers, and it was, quarreled, you know, and they didn't run around so much, and they're the best meat, you know. We didn't care about the... buy meat, you know. They didn't have no birds there yet then. And so we got that reindeer meat. Everybody was eating that reindeer meat that he had. And that was really good. Very good. 2 bits a pound. I mean, 2 bits island, 2 bits in Butte. You know? That's 25 cents. we still say 2 bits. Yeah. It was really nice. Fat, you know, that thick and good chops and all, wonderful, just very good. We had that. And then we had Prus hens and chickens, you know, those are white chickens. Then. Yeah, and then
Where did you do your mining?
Huh?
Where did you do your mining? In
Oper? No, we started in Iditarod. Oh. 32. Mm-hmm. 1932, we started in Iditarod. Mm-hmm. We started in Iditarod, 32 mine ourselves, you know. Yeah.
Did you go back after World War II?
Huh?
After the war, did you go back to mining?
It's what?
Did you go back to mining after the war was over? After World War II,
oh,
did you
yeah.
go back to mining?
Yeah, after World War II, yeah, we went back to mining again, yeah. We went back to mining, sure, yeah. Yeah, we were mining then, yet. Yeah. We went to Kayakuk, and we went broken there. We went broken there from other places. Yeah. It was so rich, you know, you could see the coal, you know, right from the grassroots down, but they were also fine, and we went broke there. Yeah, then we went, we were in Norfolk, Then, you know, we moved to Ophir from Iditarod.
That's close to Iditarod. Ophir is close to Iditarod.
Yes, yeah. It's close. It's really close. Because it's 90 miles. Mm-hmm. 90 miles by air, I guess, you know. But they were going with the horses all the time, you know. Pack horses from between between Ophir and McGrath and on, they went to horsebacks, you know, running. Yeah, we started. We went back to mining. Yes, we went back to mining, and we mined until we retired. And went to 68, you know.
Did you and Gus have children?
No.
No children.
No.
You have some relatives here, though.
Huh?
Do you have relatives?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You got relatives.
Oh, relatives, galore.
Yeah.
Relatives, yeah. I got 25 nephews and nieces in Cape Cod, Massachusetts.
Oh, yeah. Good heavens.
Yeah. Yes, a lot of relatives. Yeah, and we got, my gosh, we got them in Madisonville and all over that. And yeah. Not relatives, and a lot of them in Finland. And, yeah.
Yeah, Finns are pretty good for that.
Yeah. Lots of relatives, yeah. They've been writing. Yeah. They've been writing that. Yeah, and then we were mining, and we sometimes was good and sometimes was. Well, not good. Wasn't so good. We were 100,000 broke before we ever took one clean up out for NC. Yeah, we were, yeah. But the NC was good that time, you know, people. Yeah, they were real good. Anybody got credit then, you know, almost any time, you know. They trusted people a lot then. Yeah, they really could.
Well, I want to know if I may, Marge, about Charlie. He's lived here always, right?
I know we've enjoyed very much hearing about your early days in Alaska.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now I have the pleasure of presenting Charlie Kramer, 85 years young. And I want to tell you that our first experience in meeting Charlie, I think Paul met him before, but when we used to take the boys for a drive, we couldn't pass Kramer's Dairy because we had to go in and see Charlie and get some ice cream cone. And Charlie was always very kind and generous and very considerate of the boys, and we have never forgotten. So it's my pleasure now to introduce to you Charlie Kramer.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a long time in Alaska. I come up here in 96, and I went to Dyea, Alaska, and I was about 9 years old. And my father was freighting from Dyea to Sheep Camp, was at the bottom of the Chukku Pass. And lots of time he shorted teamsters, and I'd drive a team for it. And so, after 2 years, they built the railroad, and that put Dyea out of business. So, I left there, and I went back to Tacoma, and I lived there for a few years. And then when Fairbanks was struck, my father came in here in 1903. In 1904, the family come up. I had six sisters and just myself. And so we lived here from 1904 until I'm still here. And so when I got into Fairbanks here, they're bringing cattle in every year by boat, and Wechter brothers and them, they'd bring in about 500 head. And there's 2,000 cattle here in the summertime. So I was herding cattle for Werchter Brothers. And then in the fall, in October, when it got cold, well, then we'd have to butcher them. And I had a partner, what was a butcher, they called him Champagne Bill. I don't know how many remember him or not. And he was a butcher. He's from Chicago. And so I used to help him, and we'd hang up about 450 head of cattle. And then after that, well, then when the railroad was put through, well, then that put the cattle business out of business. Everything come in cold storage. So then I went to work, and I worked on the railroad. And then after that, my brother-in-law had this dairy. His name was Hinckley. And so they were getting pretty old, and they wanted to retire. So they asked me to take over. And so I had 14 cows. And in all them years, I built up my herd from 14 cows to 80 cows. And I had 25 calves. And then all of a sudden, I don't know what struck the government, but all of us people was in the dairy business. We had to kill our cows. And that year, I had to kill these 80 head and these calves. And I waited until October until it got cold, until the weather was enough to freeze them. And I don't know what happened, but the Indians up north between here and Barrow bought every animal I had. So I didn't lose no money. And then the fish and wildlife, I've been feeding these birds all these years, you know, the ducks and geese coming in. And so they turned around and they bought me out. They bought out over 300 acres just to make sure that they'd have a place for the birds. And that's the way it went. And so then I lived in town for quite a while, and then I found this place, and they moved me out here, and I've been contented ever since. Yeah, I got one.
One sister?
Only one left. I got six. Yeah.
She lives here?
Yeah, that's Marion Woods.
I've been chilling here.
Are you?
Yeah.
Hmm.
I wonder if she liked
her. Yeah. And I only had one son.
Your son is here.
Yeah, and he had six kids. So I'm more represented.
Right,
yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
I can see them. I go like this, you know. Then it isn't nervousness. It's just, you know, I've been shivering. Yeah, I don't know if I am cold.
Do you remember the first time you saw
Mrs.
Utilla?
Yeah.
Do you remember the first time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I heard Gus. Yeah.
I got shivering.
Yeah, I know them all ever since. Well, I come here in 1904, and what gets me the golden days. There's so many people come up from the States, and they come out and they want to look up their relatives. Yeah, I go way back to 1905 and 6. Some of them I remember, you know, and others I didn't. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you still have your old car?
Yeah. Maybe yeah. I had a little bit. Creamy. I got my sugar.
Any sugar cream in it, don't you?
Yeah, I don't know how many you people ever.
You don't want any sugar cream in it,
yeah.
Do you?
1910. I'll bring it out next spring.
Where do you keep your car?
Oh, yeah, it's down at my niece's place.
Oh, Janie's?
No, Marion Weeks.
Oh.
Yeah. It's there in the shed.
Oh.
Yeah, I've had quite a few people riding that, like Governor Egan.
Yeah.
He's just here the other day, and I was kidding him about it.
That's a 50-year-old Marion. Used to be Marion's girlfriend.
Well, during the war.
Oh, thank you.
And in the 14th century.
I didn't see the ring, you know, it doesn't
matter. They sent us down there.
I didn't
and,
like this.
No, I didn't.
And they never got no father. All they had to do with these young fellows, doing squadron rights.
Charlie, that's the only thing. This is the last 2 years you're driving your car in a parade.
No.
It ain't been the same.
No, I'm going to put it in next spring.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Do you remember Lawn Snap?
Oh, yeah. It's not.
Give it to us.
Yeah.
Charlie, I'd like to have you tell them the way you kept your milk truck heated so the milk wouldn't freeze when they were making deliveries.
I guess everybody remembers that.
Yeah, but yeah. The newcomers don't.
Yeah, when I started out there, I was using horses. And then the truck came in, so I got me a truck. And I put this milk bed on it. And I had to keep a fork in it to keep the milk from freezing. And I had a window sticking out the back end, and this black smoke was coming out. Yeah, I had quite a few years in the dairy game. And after I come back in here after the war, but then my brother-in-law had this dairy, and they only had 14 cows. So he said, we're getting old and we want to retire. So I married to his sister, and so I took over the dairy. And you can see my barn. I had the nicest barn in Alaska. It still stands in there. Yep. The dairymen come in from the States. And they surprised to see such a barn. Yeah. But everything turned turtle, and I had to kill 80 cows and 25 calves.
I don't know. Did you ever find out why they made you kill them?
You asked Governor Egan. All the rest of us have
cows. Charlie, why did the natives buy your cows? Did you know? What did they do with them? Did they buy them for food?
They ate them all. Yeah.
So they couldn't have been. Yeah. Quickly, they couldn't have been.
I had 80 cows and 25 calves.
And they bought everything.
I don't know what the setup was, and they gave me 35 cents a pound.
They did.
Yeah. I don't know what the setup was. They found out. Was it all the way from here to Barrack? And after that, I sat on with Fanny.
Coffee's good. Yeah.
Is it warming up a little bit?
No, this is hot, really hot, and that's
Charlie,
what I like.
I heard you tell a story one time about some cattle coming across the Tanana River, and that was it a Frenchman who fell off the cow?
What?
Who was that? Somebody was driving some cattle from Valdez up here.
Yeah, over the Tanana River.
Yeah, and somebody was riding on the back of the cow and he fell off.
Well, he started out and. So he grabbed a cow. This horse had quit.
Oh, he fell off his horse.
Yeah, the horse had quit. And he was swimming in the river, and he's amongst these cattle. And he grabbed this animal by the tail and climbed up on his back.
Mr. Kramer, where were you born?
In California.
California?
Well, if you were in Dyea and went there in 96, you were there during the stampede when all the thousands of people came to Skagway and Dyea to go over to Chilkoot.
And then when they put the railroad through, well, then that knocked Chilkoot out of business.
Well, you must have been there when Soapy Smith was.
Oh, yeah, I seen old Soapy.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Were you there when he was shot and killed?
Yeah. He was killed in Skagway.
Skagway.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. He wasn't a bad fella. just had that name. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, did you freight in the summertime? Was there a wagon trail up to Sheep Camp?
Yeah, it was 14 miles.
14 miles.
Uh-huh. And one year there, why, in the spring, they had a snow slide, and it buried 63 people. Yeah.
I read about that.
Uh-huh. And I remember one fellow, he was still alive underneath there, and he kept digging at the snow, and he took all the flesh off of his fingers. Yeah, trying to dig out. Yeah.
Did he make it?
No, never made it. Well, they found me, but his fingers were all peeled.
Yeah. Well, how big was Dai?
Oh, in them days, they were just going and coming. Yeah, they hit their Dai and let it go, Cheek Camp, and then they had to walk up the pass, and they go over to, in the summertime, they go over to Lake LaBarge. Or Lindemann, and then they'd have to stop there and saw out the lumber and make a boat for themselves. Mm-hmm. And going down the White Horse Rapid, that was awful dangerous. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Lots of them lost their lives, never did find them going through there. Yeah. Yeah.
And so when the railroad was built, the White Pass Railroad was built, then did your family move out back outside?
Well, went down to Juneau, and then, let me see, that was 1889, and then I went to Juneau and lived there with my aunt, and from there I went down to Tacoma, and then my father come back in here in 1903, and then he sent for us in 1904, and I've been here ever since, outside of break. One year, it got too quiet here, and after the war, my wife wanted to go out and stay with her parents. They were very old.
No, thank you. No, that's fine.
So I went out there, and we bought an 18-acre strawberry ranch. Well, then strawberries were too much for me. So I went in the chicken business, and I had as high as 6,000 chickens. Yeah. And I stayed there until the Depression came. I thought it was time to move back. And so I sold off all of them except 1,500. And I brought 1,500 chickens in here at Fairbanks. And I just got them right. They were chicken hungry. Yeah.
Well, when you came in 1904, what did Fairbanks look like?
Well,
what was here?
It was quite a town then, and the town only come out to 12th Street. That was the limit. And then over on the other side was all homesteads. And then after the war, well, then they changed it and they just kept a building out. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Fairbanks is a good town, but it's small. All they had was Second Avenue. Yeah, Second Avenue was just full of bars.
It was then too. Still is.
It is yet. Is that right? I haven't been downtown for a long time. Little old dogs.
How do you like it in the Pioneer Home?
Oh, you can't beat it. No.
You seem to enjoy it. Every time I go out there, you seem to enjoy it.
Well, I don't know. At my age and everything, I don't worry you could find a better place. I lived in town, and I lived down at that place that carries north. And then 2 weeks ago, I got word, I don't know how they did it, when I landed up here. No, I'll tell you. You couldn't ask for anything nice in the world. Yeah. You have a nice home, nice food, and the nurses are nice. Yeah, I don't know where you can beat it. That's one thing I give Stella credit for. Yeah.
And nice neighbors?
Neighbors, too.
I knew Mrs. Kramer long time. I knew her good. I knew Mrs. Kramer. I knew her good. But I don't really remember seeing you before. But I know those others, Kramer's, your sister and them. Your brother, I mean.
Well, we certainly thank you folks very much for an interesting evening.
Yeah.
And giving us some of the highlights of the earlier days.
Yeah. They were good old days.
Yes, they were good.
Talk kind of back and forth, but...
Yeah, I remember when you and Doc...
My Danton will correct everything. she take out what's...
Well, that's... We're interested, though, in how you lived and how you got there.
Yeah, well, yes.
It's a long time that you lived in this country. Yeah. A long time
for
Charlie.
I'm sure that those of us here would never be able to take it the way you have.
I really went
stuff.
Well, I didn't tell about that. I didn't tell about that when we went to Woods, I guess I told that in Mike, I don't know. Went to Woods, and those horses were there, three horses. Three horses in a tent, and no floor in there or anything. Did I tell you about that? When Gus had a wood contract, when they were thawing ground with the water, with the steam. We went there 18 miles, and it was so tough, we had to stay overnight and make a bed, to take snow, and buried all the food, into snow, and it stayed warm in there. And then we lived in that tent. Three men and three horses and myself. And there was no floor in there or anything, just on the ground. And so they went and the men went and got it to Charlie, you deal with them too, and the other men. And they went and got the boughs, from the trees, and put that on the floor, and then they put the horse blankets, they didn't need no horse blankets because, we had a stove. We went up to camp, and we had a stove, a big heater, and that kept the place warm. But then they put the horse blankets on top of the, all those perch trees, from them, they put it so it wasn't so cold, And so we all stayed in that tent and those horses, and then in the night that something went, on my face, and it was one of those roos going over my face. And I start screaming. And then the horses, I got scared then. And then the horses, when that was through, then the horses, started to pass. And that come on my face. Yeah, and that's true. My gosh, that was living, in Alaska. Yeah. Then I couldn't sleep anymore. And then I had to make breakfast. On that heater. It was a big heater, so we were warm then, it was cold a little bit, from the ground. And then I had to make breakfast with those fellas in the morning, on that. And then we had about 12 more miles to go. And that was another trip with my husband, Gus, we had the same thing and we got home about 12 o'clock in the night, and the fellas at the camp, they knew we were coming and they were worrying about us, so they had hot coffee ready and everything, And we went on the hillside and there was a place was lighting and we were so scared, we go downhill. And then everything was all right the next day. I was just as fresh and good and to work, and God saying, you can't work today, you know, you just don't scrub the house like I did, you know. I always scrub the floor when we got back, you know, getting the stuff from down flat. That's what I did a lot, but we have different sections there. So we went that way, you know, more times. And that was tough. Then I walked down once, you know. It's been snowing and snowing, and I walked that 18 miles down after the two men, you know. It was no kind of trail, you know. It was a trail, but the teams went to another fork, and then I had a walk after those. It step on those fellas, these steps, you know. It was so much snow. They went to other fork, you know, and I walked 18 miles. That was in the spring, you know. Those were the tough trips, but my gosh, you know, when the morning came, I was just, you know, just ready to go to work, you know, and I had floor scrub and everything, you know, and then the men got home for lunch. And I was just as good.
There must have been lots of days that were awful tough.
Yeah.
And
I had skirts on sometimes, you know, and they were just like a crinoline when they froze, you know. That one trip, you know, I had skirts on. Then I started to wear those. They used to have those knee pants, you know, first.
Yes,
the ladies, when they just to the knees. And then,
something like they are today, huh?
Yeah, they don't need any. They don't have anything. But those were tough trips, you know, go over to the four windows, and really, we had to go down and get the provisions. Guys had 25 men, but they were batching themselves. I didn't have to cook for them. I only cook for, you know, those that work with the teams. But they were really tough, you know. Like I had to go to work. I went to work. I always liked to walk, and I didn't want to sit in a load, you know. God said, you better sit on a load, you know. It's you get wet, you know, your skirts. I had skirts on then yet. And I got so wet, you know. But in the same tent, you know, where we stayed overnight, you know, we stopped there. So, by God said, it got cold then, turned cold. It was really soft and turned cold. And those skirts frozen, and they were just like a crinoline, you know, way rattling. Yeah, cold. Well, then we buried the stuff in the snow, and what we had, food, and buried it, and he had to load, you know, deep hole, and put the food in there, and we come and get the next day one time. Yeah. And he made me stay, yeah. Then I stayed, you know. He put a lantern. We have lanterns with us, so. He put a lantern in a load, and keep it in there so I keep warm. Yeah. But I don't know, I'm surprised. All right. And I didn't mind it. Next day, it was everything okay.
As long as everybody was all right.
Oh, those fellas, you know, then that last winter, I come down, I walked up 18 miles. And I come with the skis one time, and my guys had to go over the hills. That was 1918. Come over the ski with the skis, you know, from that 18 miles, you know. My gosh, I come with a couple of fellas, and we had to go on the hillsides. It was so much water already on it. It was late in the spring, 1918. That's the year that they killed the Riley. The fella that had all this interest, Riley Investment Company. Riley, George Riley.
You talk about walking, the other one was me the time I went to Valdez. I had to walk all the way.
Yeah, all the way down. To Valdez, yeah. Yeah.
Tell us about that, Charlie. You walked from here to Valdez?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where was that?
Did
you?
That's
a walk.
After the war. Yeah.
Where did you go? Were you going outside?
No, I was coming back. I got out of the army.
Did you went to summer or winter?
Huh?
Was it summertime or wintertime?
Well, it was in the fall.
It was in the fall.
Yeah.
Well, that was the beautiful way to go anyway. My God, I was in the snow. Yeah. I was in the snow. I wouldn't mind walking. Yeah. Oh, that's really beautiful. We go to Valdez. Oh, I enjoyed that so much. Walk. Going there.
Nice walk.
Yeah, that's really is pretty. You don't have to go to Switzerland to see that, you know, beauty.
How long did it take you to walk
Valdez? Oh, it wasn't too long. I walked about 8 miles an hour.
Oh, mercy.
Yeah.
Half running.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was only 8 days going from Valdez. Yeah.
How old were you, Mr. Kramer, when you did this?
I just got out of the Army. I was about 19. Yeah.
They have roadhouses all the way down?
Yeah, all the way. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I went that railroad down more times after the plane started to come. We went out every fall then, and from Orford. And I went that railroad, you know, more times, you know. That's steep, you know. And I was in there and see all that Smith. Smith remains.
They have a little surprise. Huh? They have a little surprise, and they want you folks to enjoy it along with them.
Huh? Okay.